The pro-democracy demonstrations of 1989 featured several student-led groups amid an outpouring of public support by millions of people from all walks of life in China. One group from Beijing University was led by Shen Tong. Like other student leaders, he was forced to leave China for his personal safety following the deadly June 4th government crackdown. I spoke with Shen Tong on the eve of this 25th anniversary of the crackdown to find out more about what the demonstrations and atmosphere were like from inside the student movement.
In the spring of 1989, I was 20 years old. I was a third-year biology student at Beijing University, also known as Peking University, or Beida as a shorthand.
What was the mood on campus like at that time? How did the discussions of this whole reformation of government start to take place on campus?
Throughout the 1980s, different probably from what people would have imagined today, looking back, is that the college campuses were not so interested in political issues or even public policies beyond kind of normal higher education campus activities. This is pretty much a decade-long opening up of Chinese society and economical liberalization. And as a result of that, our generation is a generation of, it's a product of rising expectations in many different areas. This is also moving away from a political era. My group and the Wang Dan's and a couple of other student clubs were in the extreme minority. I mean, my group wasn't focused on politics either. We didn't, none of us, even now, some of my former colleagues from Beida don't consider ourselves political. You know, we were actually interested in lobbying the National Congress and the different ministries for better research environment. When the spring of I arrived, and on April 15th, the news of the death of Hu Yaobang, there's a very strong reaction from campus. People just felt emotionally very engaged. So by that point, my group, the Olympic Institute, and a couple of very small campus groups actually felt we were very opportunistic. We thought this is finally a chance that we can kind of get the attention from the rest of the student body to start to talk about some more issues of public virtue, issues of public policy.
About how large would you say your group was before this turning point?
Yeah, we have about a dozen members, and about seven or eight are pretty active. And we're talking about a couple of people from my dorm and another dorm from across the hallway, no more than a few dozen when we had those gatherings. And a slightly larger group, which also played a very role later on, it's called Democracy Salon. And their biggest event is probably, we're talking about 300-400 students, and that only happened a couple of times.
Was there any sense of perhaps repercussions for speaking out or meeting in your groups at that time?
My group, including myself, didn't think we were really engaging in things similar to what I did in the previous years. We were just engaging in policy and public debate. And how naive were we, you know? And it started turning into protests, and we started to have a demand for greater reform. That's when it hit me. I really shouldn't do this to my family, you know, how much worry they have gone through the last three times. And I remember, actually, that's how I got elected, not by putting myself on the ballot. I was there as the representative of the news center to observe the election. And I made the speech after people running the meeting invited me that if you, whoever the candidate might be, ever fancy yourself being the so-called student leader, the main responsibility you should really take and think about is to minimize the damage from the inevitable suppression from the government against the broader student body. And for that reason, there's a rule invented on the spot that people don't have to nominate themselves as a candidate. And for some reason, I got elected. So you can see the very conflicting mindset we've had at the time.
You mentioned your family in all this. I can imagine that it must have been a rather difficult time at home at certain periods during this.
My father, who had the misfortune at that time, was working for the Beijing municipal government, which is a frontline defense for the government to defuse, eventually to suppress the student-led protest. And I would want to emphasize, Jim, that the label of student movement is quite inaccurate, because by May, 3-4 weeks later, really all walks of the Chinese society with prolonged large-scale protests, and some estimated 100 to 150 million people. At one of those demonstrations, there wasn't a protest and anger. The atmosphere was rather a carnival and a celebration. There's quite bizarre instances where, knowing that quite a few key student activists, organizers, were called back by their family, the government put pressure on the family to basically pull those students out of campus. So for my family, people who are guarding the news center and the dorm room, Building 28, actually escorted, basically blocked my father and escorted him away from the campus to avoid same thing happen to me. And there's also this kind of conflicting mentality of believing we're the true patriots. We really are not against the Communist Party, and we're really not for regime change. We really just want to help the government to reform further in a way that we understand what the reform meant to be, of a greater liberalization, greater freedom. So at the same time, a few of us who experienced suppressions, government oppressions before, somehow intuitively know this will come down badly. So there's that, but also it's the same thing for my family. They were very concerned. By the same time, they're also kind of transcended and proud of the fact that that I was very involved. So that kind of dichotomy, that kind of conflict lasted through the movement, even beyond the June 4th massacre, after I was fortunate to escape China.
Shen Tong, one of the key student leaders from the 1989 pro-democracy demonstrations in China. He spoke with me from New York.